Good morning, everybody. This is WTBR's Morning Drive. I am so excited to have my guest today. I'll go right to the announcements. But today, I think it's only fair to say a great neighbor.
I got you.
A star of stage, screen, and little screen. Rocco Sisto, we've developed, I think, a friendship through the years. Rocco lives in the neighborhood now. He's a great guy. He's a marvelous actor. He's been in so many things, and we're going to talk with him and about him and how basically the COVID affected the whole production, tape, film, live theater. And now what's happening for its return. But first, let me read a couple of announcements and we'll get right to Rocco. As you can tell, I'm really excited. He's a great guy. And I just wish he'd mow my lawn and he'd be a better neighbor. But we'll get the Pittsfield High class in 1969, they're having their 54th class reunion at the Italian American Club on Newell Street. And you ready? June 24th. Now, it seems like a long way away, but if you're putting these reunions together, it's a big deal that you get your, yourself signed up for it. The class reunion is rock and roll. We have a special appearance by Elvis Presley impersonator. He will DJ and he will do a meet and greet. It's appetizers start at 5:30. Buffet at 6, meet and greet with Elvis at 7, and music will start at 8. It's $50 a person, and you can call Kathy, NIMONS, 72 Taylor Street, Pittsfield, Massachusetts. They're good people. They're really trying hard to make this a fun time. Sunday breakfast at the Elks Lodge, yes. January the 15th, 9 to 11, you can get whatever kind of a breakfast you want. Eggs, omelets, toast, sausage, all that high cholesterol stuff the doctor tells me not to eat. But, hey, something's going to kill you. Then there's going to be January 11th, pasta, meatballs, and sausage. That's actually tomorrow when this program will air. So there you go. It's tonight. It's going to be from 4:30 to 7. It's a great pasta, meatball, sauce. Also, just some historical stuff. I owe it to the people who fought these wars. Operation Desert Storm and the first of the 101st Aviation initiated the air campaign and operation, you ready? Desert Storm, 1991. So there you go. January the 20th was the start of the Tet Offensive in 1968. There's some historical stuff for you. And one last thing, and Rocco, I got these and they work. The post office will send you free test kits. You'll get 4 test kits, rapid antigen COVID test kits. All you have to do is go https://special.ups.com/test kits. They come in the mail, no fuss, no muss. They're really, really great. So now, without further ado, foie gras, soup du jour. This guy you see in your screen, how long have you been acting?
It's very interesting you say that. You know, I just finished doing a reading of a play yesterday, and the program, unbeknownst to me, said that I had been in the business for 6 decades, which doesn't make any sense considering my age. I got my equity card in 1977. So I got my first professional job in 1977.
You're closing in on 60 decades. I hate to tell you.
Yeah, I know. It's kind of scary, but true. I was very lucky. I 3 months out of NYU, the conservatory, I was slogging it doing, I was working two full-time jobs at the same time. I don't know how I did it, but and in the middle of that, I auditioned for a 9-month tour in Maryland.
Wow!
Through Center Stage, I know the state of Maryland just so well. Let me tell you,
I didn't think they had 9 stages in Maryland. Never mind.
Well, no, it was my 9 months.
Oh, okay.
It was a 9-month contract. And it was kindergarten through prisons. Oh. I did K through. I did everything. We had. I can't remember now. It was like 2 or 3 shows in rep, and we did a show for. Grammar school kids and also high school kids. Actually, it was a very interesting play. It was called The Black, the Blue, and the Gray. And since Maryland was a border state and still was, and it was a slave state. So we toured, and it was about the war and how the war affected everyday people in at that time. And, Maryland was very interesting. I mean, I learned a lot, about how, especially in places like Maryland, some families were split. Some brothers went to vote for, went to fight for the Confederacy and others for the Union. And it was a very, it was very frightening and sad for that. And you could still feel it. You could still feel it. But that's a long answer to since 1977.
Well, but the variety of roles, I believe, and not because we're friends, but because I mean this sincerely, the variety of roles that you have played, from Shakespearean roles, you were here in our own little enclave of Shakespeare and Company, I think they've lifted the restraining order on me. I'm not sure, but
What did you do?
I clapped at the wrong time at a Shakespearean play. You're out of here. No, but seriously, and you were in The Sopranos.
Donnie Brasco.
Donnie Brasco.
Not forget, I was a Vulcan on Star Trek.
And you were the Vulcan on Star Trek.
I was a Vulcan ambassador. That was the high point, I must say. When I got to say that would not be logical. It was a high point in my career.
Well,
it is.
I'm sure you have 400 to 500 clippings of it. I know I had a cameo in Netflix, This Is a Robbery. I was on a good, probably 10 to 12 seconds.
Oh, that's very good.
Yeah.
My big thing is that, my biography I was going to name it Dead on Page 8 because I did like 2 or 3 films, right? I did a film with called The Eraser with Arnold Schwarzenegger. I don't even think the credits were over before I was dead. It was just, he broke my neck. And I lied to get the part, They asked me how tall I was, and I knew that Arnold wasn't, he's tall, but he wasn't as tall as I was, and so I lied, and it was okay because actually my stuntman was killed by his stuntman, so we never were. Well, he was on top of me breaking my neck, but we didn't have to stand next to each other, but it was all right.
You will appreciate this. You've met Sal Garazzo, the executive director of
UCLA. Yes, yes,
yeah, yeah. So he's still angry at me because my little teeny part. This Is a Robbery, is that they drafted an Irish kid from Wacona Street rather than an Italian kid from Newell Street. I said, hey, they were hurting. But it was fascinating to be part of it, to see it. I mean, for you now, it's kind of old hat, but I was totally amazed.
Well, you know, it's interesting you say that because the industry changes all the time. And I over the years, I've done like, I don't know, half a dozen, maybe eight or nine episodes on Law and Order going back.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the last time I did it, I actually wasn't being killed or killing anyone. I was actually a judge.
And I saw hadn't that
been,
one.
Yeah, I hadn't been on a set because of, you know, whatever. I hadn't been in front of a camera. And I walked in and I said, well, what about the lighting? And they said, no, the lighting's already done. And I went, what? The new technology of camera work is just phenomenal. Well, here we are. I'm talking on my phone to you. But the lighting and the high resolution, it's just phenomenal. It's phenomenal. The technology is incredible these days. And so, so everybody's doing it.
One day when you're home, I will bring you out to the local studio. You'll be amazed at the TV part of it. They have all high def cameras.
Yeah.
And how we do this now, we got a great team. You and I are talking this morning. Otherwise, you know, but bottom line, I think it's what, like you said, we have a genius team out there. Yeah. Mm. They're the people who keep me on the air. But you're right. I mean, since I started there years ago, the changes have been phenomenal.
Well, it's funny you say about the genius team, because the Berkshires is becoming a hub for film work. There are, Lizzie Aspenleader, you know her, right?
Oh, sure, yeah.
She was in the reading with me yesterday and here and down in New York. And in fact, she helped produce it and she was in the reading. But she's a producer and a casting director on films. And, you know, she's done something like 15 films in the last few years. And she's working on one right now, you know,
I'll have her on. I think the world.
You should. She'd love to be on.
And she's a marvelous actress in her own right.
I directed her in Shakespeare. Oh, wow. Yeah. Back 20 some odd years ago. But yeah, she's quite the go-getter. You know, she's has many hats. You know, she acts and, as I said, produces and casts. But it's all local. And a lot of filmmakers are, and it's getting around the business because people are going, well, you know, we need to do some location work and, you know, and the people and the businesses up there, you know, up in the Berkshires are accommodating and they like it, you know, especially in places, in times like now, in the wintertime when there isn't a lot of, and so she needed to have a big old mansion for she found one that's for sale for $12 million. And the people said, oh, no, we'll be happy to rent it for you. So there's a lot of good stuff going on that way.
There is. And, you know, by living here and being part of Shakespeare for all those years, it's always had a nucleus of very, very talented people.
Well, yeah, because of where it is and who is here. I think the thing about Pittsfield is they don't realize it. You know, I think because it was a manufacturing town, you know, because of GE and the working class and the roots of it. People don't understand that it is, you know, 30 minutes from Williamstown, 12 minutes from Shakespeare and Company, 10 minutes from half an hour from Jacob's Pillow. Tanglewood is there. I walked to work when I was working at Barrington Stage. I was able to walk to work and walk back on occasion. And then Kate McGuire got the Colonial, and I was able to work there and walk there because it's even closer. Yeah. You know, I walk my dog there now, and the city is, you know, there's so much there. I mean, you can ski, for heaven's sake. You know, you can go to inside the city limits. You know, I'm not a skier, but you know, what is it, Basquiat?
Basquiat.
Busquets.
You know how many people in New York City that are my age and maybe a couple, at least one generation younger, learn to ski at Busquets?
I know. It's amazing. There and they have world-class skiers.
Yeah, it was a special train that came from Grand Central Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Got them here at about 10 in the morning and took them back at 4 or 5 in the afternoon.
Why don't? Well, they don't have those trains anymore, right? They don't have
We're trying to get them. I know the former Senator Adam Hines, the current Senator Paul Mark, State Rep Smitty Pignatelli, TFB, and John Barrett. They had the pilot this summer, and it, knock on wood, it was well received.
Yeah, I heard they had some things to iron out, like a return trip.
Yeah. Well, yeah. The number, I guess it was more, people wanted more. But, you know, with a pilot, they just were trying to prove to everybody
that it could happen.
It could happen.
Yeah. The infrastructure is already there. They just have to polish it, you know. And
my father took me as a young boy down to where the train station was. Down on West Street, and they were tearing it down. And my father said, I'll never forget it, they'll curse the day they did this. But that was a big time. You may be, because you're a young guy. Urban renewal swept the country.
Well, they tore all that up. I saw a picture, a graph of... rail lines, commuter rails in Europe and commuter rail lines in North America. And you couldn't tell where they started and stopped. It was like someone had just scribbled all through Europe. There was all these connections and they're high speed and places that you wouldn't expect, like Portugal and blah, blah, Spain and high speed. And you can go there and here you have, you know, the old one chugging along from, you know, Seattle to San Francisco, you know, and you think, and of course, you know, they thought, we can fly there. Well, you know, the last thing with Southwest proved how well that worked, you know, so.
Well, they also said that America became more dependent on single people having vehicles, thanks to Henry Ford and others who priced them so the working person could get them. And it wasn't until later on that Europe bought into the car thing. But I'll tell you, when I was stationed in Europe in my former life a few times, that's all you took. I mean,
why would you not? You know, why? And the streets are not built for cars. No. I mean, all you have to do is drive to Naples to know that.
Yeah. I was going to say, anywhere in Italy, you know why Fiat's a big seller? Because you can put it in your pocket.
Exactly. You don't have to worry about it.
You didn't want a Cadillac Escalade on some of those.
No, well, you could live in it, but you couldn't drive in it. But you're right. It's one of those odd situations that our priorities were so jangled by the propaganda of you know, and we have this incredible highway system. Let's not, you know, worry about that. But it's falling apart. You know,
Eisenhower saw that when he was in Germany with the autobahns. I hope we can get back somewhat to rail. I know they're
not
trying.
Somewhat. I think, well, you know, it has to happen. You know,
I used to have to drive back and forth to Boston every day, and when I hear these people say, we can't have a rail system down the middle of the turnpike. What about the polywalks? Well, think of all the pollution you won't have with people riding on the train.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, I think there's going to be a trade-off.
Well, they did something in Chicago that was very interesting. They put in the middle of the, they call them expressways, not freeways in Chicago. They put the trams, you know, and they're right in the median strip, and you just walk onto it, and you know, and so all the cars are whizzing by, or they're stuck, and you get on a train and you zoom around to the city, and it goes to the airport. You know, you don't have to worry about parking. It goes right to the airport, and New York just kind of did that. It sort of Byzantine to, you know, in Chicago, you don't have to. You can just stay on the same train and go from wherever you start. And you go right there. You go there. And I don't know if Boston has that. Do they have?
I think they have mass transit to the T.
Really?
I'm not sure on that, to be honest, because I've always gone in a car. So.
Of course, yeah.
Yeah.
But now people are saying that it used to be fast, you know, to drive from Boston to Pittsfield, it was 2 hours. Now they're saying, no, it's closer to three, you know. And I say, why?
The traffic.
Yeah, and anyway.
You know, the Boston area is a three-lane highway. And, you know, I go down there for healthcare reasons. I mean, there's times three lanes and you're doing 20 miles an hour. Lucky to be doing that.
Yeah, I know. It's
So listen, I have to ask you this. For those people that are just tuning in, yes, he is a star of stage, screen, and little screen. Rocco Sisto, he's also a great neighbor. And if you want your yard shoveled or mowed, give me a call and I'll set it up and Rocco will be up.
I will. If you need help. Hey, listen, what are you going to do?
Yeah, in his spare time, things aren't good in the acting world, or they're better now than they were.
Yeah. But,
it had to be, I know for me, it was a desert, a cultural, spontaneous, inspiring desert throughout the pandemic year where nothing was open, nothing was happening. I ended up watching really old movies.
Good for you.
Yeah. And just to kind of get myself out of, I was kind of in a funk. Because, I mean, with my lungs, I was told, don't even leave the house.
Oh, so man, I'm so sorry.
We would take walks at strange times. And
yeah, well, that's the, yeah. Well, that's what you needed to do. I mean, the thing about being there is you were able to take care of yourself and, you know, take a walk. I mean, my wife and I and the dog left March, Friday the 13th, 2020. And because we were in New York, and as you know, we split our time between New York and the Berkshires, and we thought, oh, okay, we'll just leave the city because it's crazy now, and we'll go up to the Berkshires. Well, you know, we were there, and we didn't leave, you know, because of, you know, the things that were happening here. They were desolate and scary and frightening. Scary. People were frightened, and there was no work, and people didn't know what was going to happen, and weird things happened, and we're just getting out of it. I think Broadway said they just posted their first week a few weeks ago that was pre-pandemic, said the same volume of work as pre-pandemic, which but you know, it can disappear now. There's a new variant, and everyone's talking about how that is really contagious, and it might happen all over again. And I'm reticent about wearing a mask again. I'm thinking, oh well, I've been boosted three times, and you know, all that stuff. But they say no, and I have friends who were in the same situation or are in the same situation as me who have been boosted and still got COVID. They didn't die, you know. They didn't die. As oddly, sadly, what was happening to some of my friends here in New York. I had friends who passed away. So all of the deniers, you know, the COVID deniers and all that stuff, you see them on social media and my blood boils, you know, because they don't, you know, I keep on saying, hey, I live in New York. I was kept awake by the sirens and people in my, you know, I live in an apartment building. People died in my building, and I know people who died, and cohorts and actor friends of mine, you know, and very, 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 very healthy actors who just happened to have had asthma as a child, you know, and boom, you know, they died. And there was a wonderful, I forget his name because I didn't know him, but he was sort of like the emblem of that problem. You know, he was a Broadway dancer, for heaven's sake, you know.
Wow.
If Broadway dancers are athletes, there's no doubt about it.
Yeah.
They, you know, doing that stuff eight times a week, let me tell you. And he got COVID, and he was a new father, and his wife was an actor, and they did everything. Yeah. I mean, and including amputations and of limbs, and he still died. And if they can take if something like that happens to an actor, a dancer in that sort of physical condition, and then you think, well, this is not a hoax, you know. And anyway,
whoever thought it was? I mean, those are people. I had a friend in Texas, God rest his soul. He was part of the atom bomb things, Easter Island or one of them. He said they gave us goggles, snow boots. Oh. And a bag and a gas mask to go in and take Geiger counter readings.
Oh,
I don't think he had an organ that didn't have cancer in it. But long story short, he would say things about people like that. Now, and he was from Texas, so he go, Bail, that person is so dumb. It is like ignorance gone to seed. he had a million of them, but. You know, when I hear that, it's like, I'm sorry, and I don't mean to bring up and we'll move. But when I hear people, educated people, smart people, deny the Holocaust, I have to tell you, I walk, honest to God, I walk away.
You can't. How can you? Yeah, how can you?
I have to. No, I was at Auschwitz. The Polish princess and I went on a tour.
Oh,
and Buchenwald. And I'll tell you, Don't, if you want to get me blood pressure up, that's all you have to say is, oh, that never happened. Yes.
Yeah.
And it could have, and it's happening right now.
And it's happening right now.
With others, but, and so,
for those
that are just tuning in, I'm sorry I got off, and I hate to be a Debbie Downer, but that just gets me so angry, and it just shows you how really slow people are.
Yeah. Yeah,
this guy right here, his name is Rocco Sisto. He's a star of stage, screen, and little screen. He's been on Law and Order. The last time I watched him, he wasn't killing anybody, which was very nice because he's a really nice guy. He played a judge.
Yes, but I was the most corrupt judge in New York City. That's how they described me.
Well, that's a title to be proven.
I'm holding on to it.
He's also, I think, he's a graduate of NYU. And just take us a minute before we go to break and tell us about the beautiful Olivia Dukakis.
Oh my Lord! Yeah, and she was my teacher. I was she was one of those people that are, you know, the terror that I had going into her class I had her three times a week for. 3 years, two, 3 years. I mean, I by some weird confluence of fate, I was assigned to her class and also to the class of the person who taught her, a man by the name of Peter Cass, who was, I don't know if this means anything to anybody, but he was a member of the group theater and the protege of Clifford Odets, and wonderful, wonderful acting teacher. And so in the 70s, it was wild. And Olympia took no prisoners. It wouldn't happen in these days. I mean, because she was confronted. You know, she would confront, when I walked into that class, we all sat down and she lit up a cigarette. That's how long ago it was. And she goes, I will never say, or I will never ask anything of you that I've never asked of myself. But she asked a lot of herself. And it came through, you know, and she at that point hadn't won the Academy Award. She was a struggling mother of three had a career doing much like what I'm doing, which is, you know, a guest, if you can find it, a guest shot on a television show. I remember she was on Kojak, sang a line, you know, and then a Death Wish, you know, doing things like that. But she kept on talking about that it's an honorable profession and that you do, you know, she said to me, you know, I asked her, I said, why are you working? And, you know, why are you still working? And she said, I want to do important work. And she also did the unimportant work to make money, but, you know, so she went and reinvestigated the Greeks and found what it was, what the role of women was in Greek drama and who they were. And she had pride in her heritage.
Yeah.
Which at that point in my life, we came from quasi similar backgrounds. I was born in Italy, and I was always trying to pass. Do you know what I mean? It was very odd. Yeah. I was trying to pass. She nailed me, right off the bat. She nailed me, and she, ticked off the list of what I did and who I was and what background and, what we spoke at home and what we ate,
right.
And, shame about being different and looking different and, not being, waspy, all American stuff. And the thing was not to be bitter. She kept on saying, don't be bitter about this. That's the way it is. And the rejection isn't personal. It's professional. And so that way you were able to go on. Because
it was a beautiful spirit, too.
Oh, amazing.
I mean, I didn't know her personally like you did. But there's some people, their spirit, their goodness, their everything, when you meet them, it shines through.
Yeah. Well, she would come up to the Berkshires. Nico Sakharopoulos, who ran Williamstown, of course, fell in love with her. And so here she was playing like I do, playing these weird little parts and doing stuff. But then she'd go up to Williamstown and do the most beautiful work on Chekhov, and glorious stuff, And she was married to Louis Zorich, who was a wonderful actor, also from Chicago, like I am, in the same sort of situation, and so she found a place for herself in the business. And it's through perseverance and rage, she was, it wasn't a rage of destroying things. It was a rage to create. And that's what I felt. Yeah.
Man. We had to take a break. Folks, please stay with us. There's a lot more that Rocco's going to share with us, being on Donnie Bosco and
Brasco.
Okay, him too. You were on two of them. Don't be so tricky. His talent, as you can tell, he is so down to earth. I have had people, you're probably not going to believe this, Rocco, but I've had people on this show with a lot fewer credentials than you have. And they were a little uppity, if you hello. But anyhow, they were one-timers. My friend Rocco Sisto, we'll be back in just a minute. Please stay tuned. This is 89.7 WTBR FM on your radio dial, Pittsfield Community Radio. This guy lives in our community, and he's such a great neighbor. We'll be right back.
Stay tuned for more Morning Drive with Bill Sturgeon here on WTBR FM.
Support for WTBR comes from Greylock Federal Credit Union, proud to support high school arts and sports programs to help our community thrive. Greylock Federal, with locations throughout the Berkshires and online at greylock.org. And from BeFair. BeFair is one of the largest premier human service agencies in Berkshire County. If you're looking for services for a loved one or are interested in caring for the people we support, visit BeFair.org today for available opportunities.
The Berkshire's only rock station, 89.7 WTBR-FM, Pittsfield, Massachusetts. And now back to the Morning Drive with Bill Sturgeon on WTBR-FM, Pittsfield Community Radio.
All right, folks, we're back. This guy that you see, he lives part of the time in our fine city of Pittsfield. Why have him on? He's a star of stage, screen, little screen. He's been on Law and Order. He'll tell you that Danny Bosco.
Donnie Brasco.
Him too. Both of those. He's been in The Sopranos. But here is the thing. And correct me if I'm wrong. You're a graduate of NYU School of Acting, which is, that's the gold star. I know I'll get heat from that, but. Okay, That's still the gold star. You can send me hate mail. But he studied with Olivia Dukakis. But I think, don't you think being part of that ensemble at Shakespeare helps you tune your...
Oh, definitely. There was a golden time there when we first moved into Edith Wharton's house, you know, and the company started in 1978, but I didn't join the first year because they wouldn't pay me. And so I joined, I had to eat. It's that odd thing.
You got off track and you had to pick up.
I had to eat. And so I got into the company but I'm considered a founding member. And that's what Tina Packer has said. So that's what I claim. But we were there and we were quasi-communal. You know, we lived in Edith Wharton's house. And it was built, you know, on a European method, on a European model, which was that she wanted the place. She, Kristen Linkletter, B.H. Berry, and John Broom. I don't know if those names mean anything to you, but, you know, they were, and they're all, you know, British, but they wanted to work with us here, an international, interracial American company from different backgrounds. And so there was Tony Samotis, who's Greek-American, and Greg Cole, who's, you know, his family's from, he's Black and he's from the islands. And there's Natsuko Ohama, who's Asian-Canadian. And, you know, and we all lived and fought and worked. But the reason we did that was it was built on the premise that we would work on things together and we wouldn't. The model in America was that you meet for 3 or 4 weeks and then you put it on. And that's fine because American actors are great and they can do that. But to actually investigate the text, especially in a play, like in a Shakespeare's play, what you had to do was to really work on it.
Yeah.
So we would start working on a play and we would do all the book work, all the physical work, all the vocal work. And then we also did fight, you know, all the fights, fight and tumbling, the fight scenes. But we would work for months, you know, we would do workshops and in the middle of that, we were also cooking for each other and restoring the mount, the Edith Wharton's House of the Mount. And
the ghosts.
Oh, baby, they're still there. Well, they were when I was there, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, they woke me up a few times. Not fun.
Yeah, and later on, well, if there's time, I'd love you to give the one, because I believe, I honest to God, believe they are still there.
There's something there. Something there. There's something I always thought. But anyway, going back to the company, we worked, and so... and it was pride in who we were and pride in how we sounded, you know, up until that point, everyone was doing all this sort of, you know, pretend English acting, you know, they were doing all that. Hello, you know,
hello.
Oh, what a rogue and peasant slave am I, oh, to be or not, you know, and it was, you know, it was a bunch of bull. They were Brits and they said, this is bull. You can't sound like, you don't, it's an insult to try to sound like us. And through all of our research and all of our work we realized that in fact, Shakespeare didn't speak like that. You know, the English language, the English accent wasn't that way. And there's all these, you know, arguments about whether or not the Elizabethan spoke like West Virginia, you know, and there is, you know, a lot to say about that. And so we did all the research and we put it on. We put that work on, especially in the first 5 or 6 years that we were together. And we astounded ourselves and the people around us. And we got a lot of notoriety by
doing that. Yes, you did.
And by doing that, and also expertise, and also to learn to think as an actor, to learn as an individual, so that, you know, as an immigrant, I was always taught to, you know, it's always like the someone who's in who's in a position of authority, you give them that strength, right. You give them that, and that didn't happen. so you end up questioning. And as a matter of fact, going back to Olympia, you know, that was the only, always the thing. She goes, you have to question it. Why? You do it. You don't question it so that you don't do it, but you move toward doing it, to accomplishing it. And that's what we did there. So, and we were young and very energetic. And so we would do that and also put on dance programs to raise money, you know, and do tours. And then also there were some writers in the company who did adaptations of Edith Wharton's work. And so in the afternoon, we would put on plays of and a little biographical, because it's there. It was, you know, she wrote that stuff there, and or a lot of it there. And she, and so we had wonderful actors doing that, and I did a few of them. And so we'd do that in the afternoon, and then, you know, go and change and warm up and do, you know, Twelfth Night in the evening, you know. So, but it was fun.
Don't you think? I mean, I go through like Vetford Hall and Edith Wharton and Hillcrest Hospital.
Sure.
It was a
Blantyre.
Blantyre, God love it. Cranwell.
Cranwell.
You know, in the old Jesuit school and up in Shadow Brook, the old Shadow.
Yeah.
Quick war story. My dad was a fire inspector for the Pittsfield Fire Department, the first one, actually. Oh. And my mom was a nurse, and Shadow Brook burned down, the old Shadow Brook. And he threw me in the car, and there we went down there, and I sat in the car because, unlike kids today, I was told to sit in the car. really weird.
And you did.
And that's the weird part. I did.
Yeah.
Don't you think there really is... What you guys did with Edith Wharton was bring together a conservatory of actors. And you all fed and grew and argued off each other. But I think Tina Packard today and you and all the people that were part of that group, they're few and far between.
Yeah. Well, you know, there are those companies. I mean, there are some companies in New York now that are putting some stuff together, you know, and they're, there's a place, a group called the Bushwick Star, which are a group of young actors who are putting on work. You know, there's not a classical company. The thing that we had was that we owned it, you know, owned the work.
Yep.
I remember doing, I did Twelfth Night and I worked on Twelfth Night for a long time. And I have to tell you, the first couple of times I performed it, it was pretty bad. but like I said, it was one of those places that it's not a failure. You just keep on working and you keep on doing it. And, you know, after working on it for a long time, I was able to claim it and claim the work and still learn from it. Well, I went and got hired to do that part again at the Guthrie in Minneapolis.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was a Romanian director who had a concept, and as they always did. And but I was able to bring my knowledge, my ownership of the language with me, so that when I got handed a load of bull from people, they're saying, oh no, you can't do it like that because there's a comma at the end. And you'd look at them and you'd say, well, Shakespeare didn't put that comma there. Alexander Pope put that comma there. And they would go, oh wait, he's an actor who thinks or knows things. So that you learn to cut through a lot of that stuff. You know, it's hard because you actually have to, like I said, as the immigrant, I was always told just obey. But I love pleasing people, but But doing work and not feeling good about what you do makes you feel kind of lousy. And
I think with that particular group, you all refined each other. You really and truly, you know, I have a friend who's vision impaired, and he's taught me this. I've told this 1,000 times on air. But when I especially with Shakespeare, most especially with Shakespeare, I close my eyes.
Ah, well, you're very smart.
I close my, he's blind, and he told me, Bill, listen to the lyrics.
I'll tell you, do you know what people used to do or say to each other when they went to the theater, when they went to the theater? They would say, I heard a play.
Yes, I've heard that. I think you told me that initially.
I heard the play. And that's what you would do. And you get delight in how words are put together. Shakespeare, as we know, as I've yammered on, invented words. You know, some people say it was 1600, some people say it was 4000, but he invented words. He did, quite like what what's happening today in the language. We may not like a lot of it, but words are being invented in hip-hop, in rap, rhythm is being investigated in language, and and it's fun, because I remember there was something about Vincent Price on Thriller. Remember him? I loved it, because he was trying to rhyme blood with neighborhood, and I thought, oh, he's torturing it, but he's trying to rhyme those two words together. And that's what Shakespeare would do. He would try to, find words that would, that had, and then you would see something, a brilliant thing like Hamilton, which is Shakespearean.
Yeah,
in its rhythm, in how the words are put together, and it's not just there's a rhyme or at the end of each line or a couplet. There are rhymes in the middle of those. Yes. So there's this joy of finding it, and as you say, the lyrics you find, and you're carried away. So it doesn't inhibit the story. It actually it actually propels it.
And I think with me, I tend to be looking all around and missing sometime.
Oh, sure.
Now, when I close my eyes, I'm focused on this one sense. And I saw Richard, and I had seen it before, and I was like, when's it going to end? Geez, please get me out of here. I'm going to, where's the bar? but then I followed Tim's advice, and it was a different experience. I actually heard. A little bit of an aside. I worked with violent youthful offenders, and what I learned from Tim, or actually before Tim, was, and if I had one of them tell me this, I had 100 of them tell me, nobody listens to us. And I found that to be absolutely positively true.
Yeah.
They spoke in their own jargon. They spoke, but if you listened, it was a defense mechanism. It was behind this gangster is a scared little boy.
Yeah. He's
been abused and beaten up. And I can remember a PhD taking my head off one time because I said, I believe that many of these have been traumatized. And I was told by this very learned person that children all grow trauma. And I think that's been pretty well disputed.
Disproved. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, that's what you get, I think, when you go to a live. I love movies. I love watching you on TV and others. But what I really love is the theater.
Well, the thing about it is that you're the participant.
Yeah.
you are part of it. That's, you know, they're having a hard time now. There's a couple of, there's a, there was a big thing happening. Not a big thing. There's an amazing production of Death of a Salesman with a black cast on Broadway. And actually a few actors who graduated from NYU, Lynn Hawley is in it. Anyway, there's some brilliant production, and it's closing soon. And but it's been very successful, but
good.
There was an audience member that was displeased and didn't know, or made it clear that they were stopped the performance. Basically, he didn't, couldn't fathom that what was happening on stage, that they were affecting what was happening on stage, and they had to stop the performance. And they actually confronted the person. Well, that he or she may have been a bit off, but the thing is that people don't know that it's a dialogue between the audience. In theater, it's a dialogue between the audience and the performer. Yesterday we did a reading of The Rhinoceros. I don't know if you know that play. It's an amazing play. It's about one of the early absurdist plays written by Romanian, oddly enough, Romanian Ionescu, and it's wild because Ziro Mostel and Gene Wilder did a film of it years and years ago.
Oh wow!
And
great actors.
And it's about this town, and all of a sudden these rhinoceroses show up, and what the realization is that people are turning into rhinoceroses. And it's about hysteria, mob mentality, basically. It was written during the communist era. And I say this because we did the reading. We did it at St. James in Great Barrington a few months ago. And then now we did it in New York. But the venue here was a stage, but the audience were at tables. You know, there was a bar in back, and they were there, and it completely changed. Because it wasn't immediate. You weren't there. You were having it for dinner. Do you know what I mean? You weren't active in it. And everyone, you know, every actor on the stage came back and was like, "Oh, something's off." And yeah, something's off because you guys weren't playing with us. You know, you were having drinks. You were saying that, you know, the gin is watered. Yeah, you know, and why I had to spend $15 for a glass of wine, you know, that kind of stuff. And so they weren't put there. And and that's the thing about live theater. You know, I remember, I can't remember who it was. It might have been Carol Channing or someone that said, "I can't understand why all the boring people decide to come to the theater on the same day."
That could be Carol. But you know, now I think what to kind of agree and dovetail what you're saying, they did this show, and I I don't remember where I parked the car. So this is 5-10 years ago, down at the Fitzpatrick. And it was about a lady who couldn't sing Silver something. And all her friends told her she could.
Is that the one that Meryl Streep made into a film about
anyhow, it was packed. I mean, it sold out every performance. They took it to New York and in too big a venue.
Yeah.
You lost this. You felt like you were with her in her Manhattan. She was a gazillionaire's wife.
Yeah.
In her Manhattan apartment.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's when I started to really, and that was many years ago, grasp the importance of the stage and the setting. Just what you're saying.
Well,
people sitting around drinking, talking, and you're trying to act, that to me would just put me right in a nut house.
Well, you know, you were talking about the Manhattan Project. You know, we talk about critical mass in the theater, that there has to be that alchemy of the right people and the right space. You know, it's not for nothing that those theaters at the Greek built all those years ago were considered holy. You know, that those are holy spaces that, and great care was taken for the acoustics, you know, and so that you could be heard, and that's it. It was an experience that everyone partook in, you know.
Anyway. Yeah, I go back to our friend Mark Dole and Martin Rayner and playwright Mark St. Germain in Freud's last session. They took a picture of Freud's office and replicated it.
Yeah.
Do you know what that meant when you walked in there? The confines of this office with all these things and two absolutely marvelous actors, great playwright. Yeah. You're sorry. We got about 3 minutes left. First of all, get back here. Stop. Be careful down there in New York. There's crazy people there.
I know.
And the only crazy person in this neighborhood.
Well, me.
Yeah. But, you know, I it's so always interesting to have you on because you have so many facts about theater and so many anecdotal things that I really think the listeners and viewers like. You know, the roles you paid from Shakespeare to a gangster to a crooked judge, hard to believe, but you're an amazing talent, but most of all, the Polish princess and I think you and Barbara are amazing neighbors.
Oh, and same for you. You know, it's good. I'm, you know.
It's a great neighborhood, isn't it? It's a great neighborhood to walk in. Everybody's kind and knows each other and chats. Well,
we were up there, Virginia, next door, you know.
Oh, she's a sweetheart.
Sweetheart. And, you know, she, you know, we were up down here and she said, you know, I shoveled your walk. And I'm like, oh, God, you know, that's so amazing. You know, here you are. But that's great. People look out for each other, you know, and we get angry. You know, they didn't pick up the garbage or.
Yeah.
What about the recycling?
Well, it'll be last night. When this is going to air tomorrow on the, whatever tomorrow is, the 11th. There's going to be a city council meeting. And I have a couple of friends. I've already texted them to say, the uniform of the day will be flak vest and helmets because of the snowstorm on Christmas Day. But come home. We'll get together.
Yeah.
Thank you for doing this. I really mean it. You can just Google him and he'll tell you all the things he's been in. And a lot of them you can watch on YouTube.
Yeah.
Really and truly.
You know, if you're producing and directing anything, I'm available. Yeah.
Well, yeah. And by the way, if you need an Irish, forget it. Anyhow, I thank you so
Irish
much.
Veteran.
Yeah. Somebody said to me today, boy, or no, a couple of days ago, I had to give him my birthday. And he went, whoa. It's like that. Whoa.
I know. When
I know God to my audience and to you and Barbara and the killer dog, and he's got a killer dog. So if you see Barbara walking with a dog, stay back because that dog will
lick you to death.
That's right. God bless. Take care of each other. Honest to God. I made a pledge this year to do more than I have done in the past to take care of people who aren't as fortunate. I mean, I'm sitting in a homemade studio.
Yeah.
In a nice warm house, hot coffee, had a nice breakfast. Yep. There's some people, we're not that lucky.
Nope.
So give to food banks, give to the organization, give to the Salvation Army. Quick thing, and I got to run. The Salvation Army, when I was in Vietnam, was very good to us. I'll leave you with that. Rock, get home.
All right.
Say hi to Barbara.
I will.
And make sure that killer's restrained.
All right. I'll talk to you soon.
Bye. Thank you.
Bye.